there ain't nothing to it. Go ahead and bring Goliath on. Ain't no giant, I ain't gon' fire on. Catch a fade, you, I'm wrong, I'm gone. Y'all can catch the wave that I am on. I am Icon, y'all are wide wrong. Think that I'm a wrecking cyborg.
I'm about that life. Ask P. Diddy. I just came from his house. Even though I'm feeling funny after drinking P. Diddy juice. Wait, what the fuck? What's happening here?
Sorry, that is just as funny as it was last night. Sir, know what you talk about now in the studio, Matt? You can't wait till I fight a kangaroo. I'm telling you, the kangaroo has got to be the least, like the one I'll have the least, the most chance with, I would think.
Kangaroos aren't venomous, mate. It's the other ones that I'm concerned about. I think you and the Komodo dragon will be a good match.
Yeah, it's hard to get low with that. You got to get real low to fight the Komodo as well. But hey, how's it going, folks? MC's Bleeding Edge in the house. We're here to do some Fallout Episode 1 recap action. I am Jeff S., a.k.a. True Knowledge, humbled to be the creator and co-host of the MC's Bleeding Edge. With me on the panel, back from killing it on the panel from Shogun, Real Wrath of Khan. What's up, Jassim?
Hey, what's up, Jeff?
Back with me, Cybernetic Shark, after he just got done killing it on moderating City Slickers 2 last night. How's it going, Cyber? There you go.
Good.
I liked it better when you didn't say when you were just muted. You said it was perfect. Matthew surprised us like he always does, coming from down under. Decided to pop on. Matthew, how's everything going over at Born to Watch?
Going great, mate. 102 episodes in now, so pumping. Feeling very good about it.
I saw you just put some short form content up the other day. I can't remember what the hell it was. It was interesting.
If it was interesting, you must be mistaken. It would not have been Born to Watch.
Oh, no, it was like another like a snippet of something that you cut from like some other from a trailer or from like a movie or something like that. One of those deals or something like that.
Okay. We did the best parodies of Basic Instinct this week with Peter Griffin.
Yeah,
Peter Griffin and. What's the Willie, Groundskeeper Willie from The Simpsons?
That's what I saw. Okay. Yeah. I was wondering what that was all about.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, as a quick intro, folks, and just to kind of plug the Bleeding Edge, you know, of course, support all the individual, you know, creators that are here on the show. And we'll do all our plugs at the end of the show. But support the MC's Bleeding Edge by simply considering to, you know, like, follow, subscribe, you know, and most importantly, turn on notifications on our YouTube channel so you're aware when we're live 3 nights a week. And even some weeks, you know, 4 nights a week, like tonight. But so basically, to start this right off and get right into it, the first question I'm going to ask the panel, and I'll start off with Matthew, and then I'll go around with Cyber, and then you can wrap things up, Jassim, is your thoughts on the drop of it, but the decision by Amazon Prime Video and Amazon themselves to go ahead and drop all 8 episodes of the show in one day, even prematurely. They even rushed it, getting them out. What do you think, Matthew? Good, bad move for them? What do you think their thinking was with that?
I personally really like it, to be honest. Like as much as the anticipation is great when back in the old days when you used to wait week to week and have the water cooler discussions about what happened on Seinfeld or what happened on the TV show the night before, I think we thrive and we live on content nowadays and we want it all now. And I think it's probably gets them more negative vibes if they drip feed it. And you've seen even with, I guess, Netflix are trying to do, you know, both sides of it by they'll do a season and they'll cut the season in half so that you still get them subscribing for an amount of time. But, mate, I really like that. I was super surprised. On purpose, I learned nothing about this show. I've watched no trailers. I've read nothing about it. I saw the very first drop of it, a couple of photos. I was like, yeah, I want to watch it. So when I logged on to Amazon Prime and saw that the all 8 episodes were there, I was like, fuck, bring it. I can't wait.
Okay. Cyber.
All right. So my thoughts on them dropping all of the episodes at once. Like I was saying in the studio before, I personally myself, it doesn't matter which way they do it. I don't care if they do it all at once or by every week. It doesn't really affect me at all. But I thought that, you know, to get Amazon some money to get Amazon kind of to get their, you know, kind of pull some of the subscribers from Netflix, like I was saying, I think this was a smart idea because they're trying to compete with Netflix here. I mean, even Jeff Bezos himself has said that a few times that, you know, they're always trying to compete with Netflix because of how popular Netflix has become, especially with Amazon Prime films. So I definitely feel that this was smart that they decided to drop it early and then drop it all at once, versus like how what they've done like with Invincible, that animated series that everyone is pretty much in love with, where they've done it in two halves and stuff like that, and you know people having to wait to get to it. So I think this was kind of a smart idea to really get this Fallout TV series to people, you know, that really love the game, or and to give them kind of a fresh idea of what Fallout is. I thought this was a smart idea by their part.
Jasmine.
So when I first heard about the series, I heard about it from a tweet that Elon Musk made that actually advertised the whole Fallout commercial. And since then, I've never read anything about Fallout, never even looked into the video games. And I was very surprised to hear that they actually released the series earlier than what they originally planned. So that was cool. I only started watching the series ever since you told me, Jeff, that it was about to get released soon. I like that they released all the episodes at once, and it was actually expected for many reasons. One being that in the streaming world, if you release all episodes at once, you end up having higher viewership of that show in general than if you would just do it like one by one. Because in the past, when shows like would release episodes one by one, over time, the amount of people that would watch each episode would actually decrease. So that's why they chose to go with all the episodes at once. And so far as went well, Amazon was hoping to use Fallout as a great way of pushing Prime Video into the advertising business to make it self-sustainable. And overall, as a viewer myself, I just loved having all the episodes right there.
Well, I guess it does boil down to personal preference when it boils down to it, right? I mean, me personally, I don't have a problem with it. I'm still going to watch it weekly because that's just what I do. It's just what's comfortable for me. But I do binge some TV series occasionally, you know, and it doesn't really bother me. I just think it's interesting that the Amazon, of all people, did it. But I get what all of you are saying as far as reasons for it, and I get where, you know, why you enjoy it. So basically the way that, you know, this, first of all, the episode is titled The End, and it starts off with a flashback, and I pop to the year 2077, really reflects from, you know, from the game, the period of that of this alternate reality of like Earth, where in the U.S., you know, they have technology that's like, you know, what you'd think it would be in year 2077, like robots and shit. But yet they also have like, you know, still don't have color on their TV sets. And they've got these old school TV sets and old school radios and shit and whatnot. They listen to all this old school, you know, squeezy music and everything and whatnot. We see this whole birthday scene where basically the actor, you know, Cooper Howard, is performing to make money or whatever, whatnot, and getting his balls busted by the father of the kid, basically, right? And he's there with his daughter just to make some side money and everything, but he's an actor that, as we saw, we've seen the trailer, also promotes, the Vault-Tec Vaults, and that would be the character that Walter Goggins portrays. So, you know, he later on obviously becomes the ghoul later on in the episode. But I just want to go around and ask what you guys think of that flashback scene where we see the bombs getting dropped and all that and whatnot. I thought it looked great, the way they shot it with the bombs getting dropped, especially when they dropped those three there at the end. And I thought it looked really interesting, too, with him, you know, Goggins riding the horse and all that shit and whatnot with his daughter. I'm sure they're going to show more of that, probably. I don't know if they will. But what do you think, Cyber? I'll start this off with you. What did you take out of that whole opening scene that I think took probably 8 minutes?
So, I mean, it's a pretty basic, you know, flashback scene, kind of give you an insight into kind of where the world is, you know, where the world was, what happened, and what caused it to become the reality we will see later on. And, you know, we get a good, you know, look at Walton Goggins, you know, character who ends up becoming the ghoul. And, you know, he's like this TV performer and he's performing, you know, for this birthday party. It's very 50s looking style, which pretty much Fallout always looks very 50s retro look. And, you know, we get to see like this, like classic, you know, family life at that time. You know, we have the guys hassling the performer and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a decent intro kind of, you know, to kind of get you an idea kind of who the ghoul is before he becomes the ghoul. And kind of, you know, kind of where people were at a little bit before the nuclear explosions happened that caused the fallout to happen. And, I mean, I think that after that first bomb goes off and it shatters those windows, I thought they did a really good job of giving you a realistic effect of what it would be like if you were, you know, hit by the shockwave by a nuclear blast. And I thought they did a good job there. But, like, those people rushing into the bunker and that one husband punching the one guy, like, you can't come in and shit, was absolutely, like, exactly how I feel people would have been if there had been an actual nuclear blast that happened back in the 50s. So I thought it was pretty accurate of how a person would react in this kind of situation. So I think it playing out to the video game itself, which I played Fallout a little bit. I never got really in depth into playing it, but I have played it a few different times, different ones, and cut a little bit of the story. And I feel that was perfect storytelling of the Fallout games, how it kind of started, given that background to it. So I thought it was a decent beginning and opening that I think really ushered into the series, you know, what we're getting into.
Okay. Breath of Khan.
So with the beginning of the series, so as someone who like never gone to Fallout in the beginning, like, I didn't know that person would be the ghoul until, you know, at the end of the episode when we find that the voice is similar, the face is similar, that type of stuff. What is interesting is a few things. One is, if you notice that at the end of the episode, when, like, you know, everyone's, like, either going to the vaults or into the car, you'll find that it seems like only the rich people, actually had vaults in their homes. So as like time goes on later on, you find that a lot of these vault people, they carry habits, they carry attitudes that the wealthy would normally have, you know, like emphasis on hygiene, all that stuff.
Well, that wasn't really a vault necessarily. That was just like a bomb shelter made by the same company, Vault Tech.
Yeah. And those vault bomb shelters would actually eventually get connected to form the Vault Society.
No, right? The vaults are specifically designed to be like contained people in them, like where they don't come out. You know, like that's the whole concept of the vault. Like when we see Lucy later on.
Yeah, but those things were built later on.
Yeah, no, they're being built right at that point when the bombs are dropped. They've already been being built. That's what Cooper Howard does for a living.
Yeah,
by acting, he advertises for Vault Tech for the vaults. The vaults are already built. They've already been built at this point when the bombs drop. And so have already purchased, you know, their ability to get into them and whatnot. And they've already decided to go in them and whatnot at that point. They're already in the vaults. They're actual big tech, like big, you know, buildings that they build.
Right. Okay. Oh.
But you are right, Jassim. I'm going to sneak ahead just an episode. They do say that it's only the rich that are in vaults.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They do say that. So it is only the rich that are in vaults. No one else gets let in the vaults.
Yeah.
So you are correct in saying that I would assume that only the wealthy have bomb shelters in their homes. That the rest of them are just left to die.
Oh, wow. But, so
yeah,
my assumption was correct.
Yeah. So you are right. In a way, you are right that only the rich got to be in the vaults.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good guess.
Thank you. And I will also say that the timing of the release of the episode was very interesting, because if we look today, you know, we have anxiety over like nuclear war, as like, you know, the war in Ukraine's happening. And as of just a few hours ago, Iran just launched their first attack on Israel. So the timing is very interesting for this film. I'm not going to go into theories. Just want to say that out there. I also found it interesting that throughout the whole party, like if you pay attention to like what the radio's saying, what the TV's saying, it's like people are saying like, yeah, the president, he's nowhere to be found. We have no word on the negotiations. And then the lady, whoever hosted the party, immediately turns it off. And then when people are watching the TV on like, you know, possible nuclear war, immediately turns off like, hey, folks on the party, let's have fun. And as Cyber was saying, that's exactly how people would react in like, you know, when there's a nuclear war about to happen. It's like people act crazy when the crazy stuff happens. But before that, people are going to either be worried, which it seems like the majority of people, or you have the minority of people who are just like, look, this is our last days on Earth. Let's just enjoy it. Or like that newscaster said, like, why should I talk about the weather next week when there's probably not going to be a next week?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally, the thumbs up thing. You know how the photographer guy, the father, was like wanting him to do a thumbs up, but the guy doesn't want to do it? I might be wrong, but I think the thumbs up was meant, you know, for that guy in your background, Matt. Like, I think that was meant as like a signature for like, oh yeah, if you see a nuclear bomb. And I think that's what the thumbs up is supposed to mean originally with your background. Am I wrong?
I don't know. I think that I do know that he does mention that in the army that he, you know, you did the thumbs up to test about how, what you had to do, whether you was fucked or whether you could run yeah. away. I don't know what the thumbs up that he does.
The thumbs up dude behind him is a little pip boy dude and whatnot yeah. for the cults and whatnot and shit that like they put on posters and shit like that and whatnot to make people like stay high spirited.
Yeah,
they live in the vaults.
They have
bobbleheads made out of them and shit.
Yeah, but the cowboy, he didn't want to do the thumbs up. I might be wrong, but is it because the thumbs up for the cowboy doing it is a bad thing? Or is it something else?
Maybe his thumb stunk. Maybe he was thinking his thumb stunk he shouldn't have.
Yeah. But otherwise, I think... Oh, it's actually because he wants to do that signature pose. That's why. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Okay, USA. All right, Matthew, what are your thoughts, sir?
Okay, so obviously anything with Walton Goggins in it is fucking amazing. He is incredible, and I can't wait to see what he does with the ghoul as it moves on throughout the series. But he is so good here. You can tell just the absolute fear that he has, knowing that obviously him being in the military, that he knows that it's all over, even before the explosions, which is why he doesn't want to do the thumbs up, because he's like, in this situation, it's not really cool, because he knows what it means from his perspective. So I'm interested to see what his signature pose is and what it meant when he was him to be the thumbs up. So I'm keen to find out what that is, Jason, with you. But I find typically that, geez, the rich are wankers. Like, it's obvious that the end of the world is coming. They are days away from destruction, and they're just having a party like it. And like what you said, like, they just don't care. And but surely you would, are you having a kid's party when the end of the world is nigh? Like, it's ultimately it was minutes away, but they didn't know that. But at the very worst, it looked like it was days away, or the very best looked like it was days away. I also found, I thought it was really cool that he goes straight onto his horse and pisses off on his horse. He doesn't bother with the cars. And it's also, someone made the point earlier that, I think it was you, Jeff, that you said about how, although this is 2077, it's like it's 1952. So does this mean that we're finally going to snap out of the shit culture that we have going on at the moment and we're going to go back to a more wholesome time? And is this what this means? Is that, like, as we go further into the future, everything that's old is new again? And so we're like, well, what we're doing now isn't working, so we're going to go back and try and embrace those values of what we had in the 50s. Not that that helps them very much in the vault later on, but it's, I thought, as just a very short 10-minute sort of intro into what we got to come, I thought it was really good. It had me hooked. From the minute one, I was really perplexed between that 2077 and the 1950s about why is this like this? Why are we like this? And then I just, again, it's just anything with Walton Goggins, I'm all in. I'm sliding all the chips in. And I'm like, he could be painting a landscape and he'd have me just absolutely polarized. So, yeah, I thought it's a great start. And then obviously the explosions, the one explosion, which seems like, oh, it's not, it's just a fire. And then when we actually start to see the mushroom cloud is incredible. And then as he's riding off, the three and then the one right next to him, I thought it's got a real cinematic feel to it. I don't know about what you guys think, but the scope and the way it's filmed and the way it looks, it's got a real cinematic feel. Like I don't know what the budget is, but it's got to be massive for this. It looks really, really good. And even moving forward into other episodes, the actual show, it looks incredible. Like the CGI.
I heard that.
Mate, it is so fucking good.
They made it very game authentic too.
Yeah,
I did play Fallout, especially a lot of Fallout 3. So I have played the game, so I do know a little bit about the lore, I guess, probably maybe more than everybody, right? Matt, it is really well shot. It's almost like cinematic level.
Yeah.
When they drop those nukes. The Lucy part that comes up after that, I think I'm going to try to break that up into two segments of two questions.
Oh, wait, Jeff, before we continue, I have something to add.
What?
I don't know if you guys know this, but the people who directed the show, they were also the directors of Westworld. So that could help explain why it looks so cinematic, like so great.
Not Christopher Nolan.
It's Jonathan Nolan.
Yeah, Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother that did it, that helped him do Interstellar and shit and whatnot and everything, is one that did that, directed it. Yeah, he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just looks amazing. It's incredibly well shot.
He was involved in pretty much all the stuff that his brother's done, so he's been a part of all of it, like the Batman trilogy and whatnot and everything. He was involved with the writing of that and all that shit and whatnot, right? He's going way back. The whole Lucy deal is really well done. It's a big chunk of the episode is her, I think, mostly. There is that separation where it goes over to Maximus, but we'll start off with Lucy, and I love that montage they do with her in front of that council or whatever, whatnot, because she wants to get married, and she does the whole montage with her whole like charismatic little, you know, spunky personality that she has, or whatever, heavy personality, and it shows all the different stuff she does in the vault, right? Like and there's a lot of throwbacks to the games and like those scenes and stuff like that and whatnot, stuff that you see. Like there's Nuka-Cola machines that like Nuka-Cola, like that is a company from like the games. But basically she, you know, they use the Pip-Boys, right? Which are the personal information devices that they use, right? To process their personal information to like signify to her that they've given her the grant to get married. Right. So, you know, they open the door and it turns out, Jasmine, that they were sending telegrams between each other, the two vaults, right? Basically, you know, they go over to, you know, for the ceremony, Lucy does, you know, after, you know, we see her, you know, we meet her father, Kyle MacLachlan's character, who is the overseer of the vault. And we see them using a projector to create this sort of landscape and whatnot over like the area around their crops and shit and whatnot for this sort of wedding ceremony. And essentially when they meet the other group, you know, from the other vault, there's supposed to be a trade, like an exchange of like, you know, seeds and whatever the fuck for like the dude that's going to marry, you know, and like provide the sperm and shit and whatnot to further the human race, you know, to Lucy. It turns out to be Monty. And the one blonde-haired chick is all like sticks her tongue out and shit and is like, you're lucky or whatever, right?
She's a little horn dog. And basically, you can see that the fucking the Raiders from Jump, because they're like starving, right? They're like, but you know what I'm saying? Like they're sitting down to eat and they're like starving and shit and whatnot, right? They're all dirty looking and shit and whatnot. They look ill-kept in their vault uniforms and all that shit and whatnot. They don't look like vault dwellers at all. You know, like some of them don't clap during the, you know, the speech and all that and whatnot. They like refuse to clap. You know, it's very interesting. The brother, Lucy's brother, can tell something's off during that. You can see that, like, he's already sniffing something's dirty here, you know? And the leader of this whole group or whatever, I guess it's called Lee Meldover. She's the one that's the leader of these Raiders or whatever, whatnot. They're impersonating the Vault people, right? Which is basically what's happening. We see Lucy's place. She has a mailbox in front of it. It's really cool. You know, they go in there, and obviously, like, you know, fuck, right? Like, the dude just takes his clothes off and shit and whatnot. Lucy's like, okay, USA, or whatever, okie dokie. And then they fuck, right? And, you know, the brother goes, like, into Vault 32 and starts snooping around and sees, like, dead bodies and shit and everything and whatnot, like, being eaten, like, the leg being cut off the one dude and whatnot because they're cannibalizing bodies and shit and whatnot. That's the only reason why they'd have that going on. Raiders the cannibalism is a known thing or whatever, whatnot in the games, that people eat human meat and shit and whatnot to survive. So like that's what was going on with that when they see that body. But the brother now knows what's going down. We get a great fight scene when, you know, the dude, the husband goes to drink water like he's never drank water before in his life, right? And like right at that point, Lucy uses her Pip-Boy to detect that he's radiated because he's been exposed to like the outside, you know, if you go outside the bowl, everything's radiated, right? And that's why he's like, you know, so thirsty and whatnot and everything. She sees scars on him and shit that doesn't make any sense. And then they fight. They have a great fight scene, really good fight scene. And she gets stabbed and it's real, real fucking like gnarly and shit and whatnot and still wins the fight and shit. Tears him up with that glass. Holy fuck, she really got him. He comes back, of course, but, We see her use a stim pack, right? A stim, you know, from the game where you just basically inject it into any wound or any gunshot or whatever, whatnot, and it just automatically, like, you know, heals it temporarily, whatnot, so you can just move on and fight and whatnot and everything, right? And like stay alive and function while she's like, you know, has the stab wound. And that's when everything is just you see her walk out and she sees everything's gone to shit. The Raiders are killing everybody. Right, like, you know, it's straight up warfare. And I'll stop there and go around and ask you guys what you think about everything so far. Then I'll finish the Lucy part and we'll do another round of questions. So Cyber, if you want to lead this time, what do you think about that opening part of Lucy's segment of that initial part of the episode? It's pretty lengthy, going up to the point where she walks out and sees the real bedlam that's really going on and everything herself.
So, I mean, it was a great little start. Her basically kind of talking about certain things, you know, given those other people that are in the bunker with her, you know, information about herself. It was a nice kind of like little introduction to her, you know, her saying her name, all this kind of stuff. She's saying that, you know, she's sexually healthy and all this kind of stuff. She should be able to produce offspring and stuff like that. Was really funny. And, and then she goes through kind of her daily routines of what she does and stuff like that, which was pretty fun. And was very, like, you know, a kind of a nice way of, like, introducing the character. So I thought that was pretty good. And, you know, leading up to the wedding, you know, we get introduced to her father, who's played by, you know, McLaughlin, who's a great actor, Twin Peaks, all that kind of stuff. It's so funny seeing him. He looks so old. I know he's in his 60s, but still, it's just funny seeing him. Like, it's been a while since I've seen him. I'm like, holy crap, he looks old. You know, from the, you know, original Dune in 84, 40 years ago. But anyways, so that was fun. And then we get introduced to her brother, who is played by Moses Azarias, who, if you have ever watched Hannah Montana, he played Rico on that show. And I've seen him in bits and pieces and other films like that. And I think he's a fun actor. I think he's got a lot of talent and he doesn't get to show it. I mean, his little spiel, his little short, small role in Ender Game, he was really fantastic in. He played a really great bully kind of character. He was really fun. And I really like Moses Arias. So I was happy to see that he was in the spell, or TV series, I should say. So he was fun to see. And seeing him like full grown too is pretty funny too. But yeah, I thought kind of the introduction to these different people that are in this bunker area was really funny too. You know, like you were mentioning the Vlad Stinger tug out and stuff like that. And, you know, all these people definitely, you could tell like they have never seen the real world. They're all living off of what they've been told about the real world, you know, being stuck down in this for generations and generations for the last 200 plus years. And, you know, you kind of get an idea of kind of where these people are coming from. So, I mean, you know, leading up to the wedding, we have the wedding, of course, which was, you know, pretty basic wedding, felt very like a wedding kind of deal. During the wedding, talking about conceiving was hilarious. The one mentioning about you, like, as soon as they got married,
sperm count, they asked them, right? And he couldn't even answer. They should have, that should have been another tip off.
Yep. And, you know, it was very, very funny kind of sequence and funny kind of wedding at the same time. It seemed very, you know, like traditional wedding. And then they end up going off to her room or whatever, wherever she stays, and they get it on. And I was a little upset by that scene because all it showed was him naked. And I was like, what's the point of me watching this if you don't show me both naked? Or show me some skin of some sort on this person. I don't want to just see his ass. I want to see something of hers, like some thighs or, you know, some cleavage. Come on, give me something, you know? Yeah, I mean, that just looked weird. Her, like, hopping on top. He's fully naked, but she's still in her wedding dress and not doing anything. I'm like, what's this? So I was kind of like, I'm like, this is kind of pathetic.
Every chick from the vault gets banged in.
So I, you know, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But so I was a little disappointed there. And then afterwards, she's lying in bed and he gets up. We see his ass again. I'm like, why do I need to see his ass again? I don't need to see his ass again. You could have just shown him from, you know, the torso up, you know, or something, you know. But anyways, he gets up and starts doing kind of some weird things. And he's like drinking out of a vase with the water and stuff like that. And she's kind of looking around going, what the hell's going on? And, you know, of course we get, you know, we see that her brother ends up finding out that all the people that these people are supposed to be are dead over on their side of the compound. And you're like, holy crap. And he's like, he starts running and making his way back. And then all of a sudden that's when that guy starts to go psycho and they start fighting. And, you know, he kind of beats her up, you know, pretty good and eventually stabs her. Which I thought, you know, thankfully it was in her left side, so that's a good thing. You know, no internal organs over on that side, so, you know, no real damage there. But thankfully, you know, and she ends up cutting him with that broken vase that he was drinking out of. And as he's lying on the floor bleeding out and stuff like that, you're kind of like, oh, I thought he was dead. I think, you know, when I first saw that, I was like, he's got to be dead. He's bleeding out. He's completely bleeding out. So later on, we'll find something else out, but still, I was like, oh, good. She killed him. Good job. Good job, Lucy.
I already said he came back from dead.
Did you? Okay. I just want to make sure. I couldn't remember. Because you said up until when she leaves the compound. Okay.
Up until the point where she walks out from the fight and sees everybody killing each other and whatnot and everything. The Raiders, like, killing all the vault dwellers.
Okay. See, I need the clarification there. So yeah, after that happens, and she makes her way out of the room, starts making her way down the corridor, and she sees the dead one of her people up against the wall with something jabbed into him. She goes into the armory to that's get
where
a.
That's where I wanted you to stop right there.
Okay.
There we go. Thank there you, go. Sir. Matthew, sir, your thoughts on that parcel of time in the episode.
Yeah, I think it's again. It's great. I love the interview. I love where she's trying to justify that she's worthy of being a wife, that she can reproduce, and I think that's a really cool little snippet there. And then, again, we go back to, it's now 219 years into the future, but again, we're stuck in apparently 2077, which is 1951. So I think that's really cool. We learn a little bit about what's going on there. I love Kyle MacLachlan again. He's another one when he's in something, it's always quality. And so that was really good. I thought, I'm with you, Cyber. Look, boobs make everything better. I know Jasmine agrees, even though he won't come out and say it. But look, boobs make everything better. I thought it was a bit odd that she did not get naked. I thought, but then again, it's 2024 and now it's the male's turn to be the meat, whereas the female's been the meat for the last 30 years or 40 years. So it's now the male's turn. Look, I think that I thought it was really cool. And it was that feeling of dread because you knew something was off as soon as that vault door opens and you know there's something wrong. And that the boss, whatever her name is, I forget what her name is, but she's a baddie in everything she's in. She was a baddie in 24. She's a baddie in everything that she's ever in. She just plays a baddie. So I should have known from as soon as seeing her that shit's going to go bad. And, of course, I'm coming from a zero base here, so I had no idea what was going on. So for me, I'm on the edge of my seat thinking, these guys aren't right. There's something wrong here. And then obviously you go to the wedding where you can tell that they're not right, that they are just not from the vault. And I'm with you, Cyber. I think the brother, as sniveling as he seems, I think he's really quite cool. It's quite good that he's the guy that goes and finds out what's wrong. But then he slips back into the sniveling, hiding under the tables and making sure he's looking out for himself. I think it's a really cool part of the episode is because you've got these, they're hopeless. The guys in Vault 33 are hopeless. They've got no chance, but they still, you know, but somehow it's only really because but they've really got no chance. Like they're completely outmatched. How she beats Monty is beyond me, but she does it, and she has to sacrifice herself to a point by being stabbed in order to get him. But that's quite a wound, too. That's quite an injury that he sustains. I was quite amazed when we see him pop up a little bit later looking like Bishop from Alien 3. When he gets beaten to death and his ears hanging off his face and you think there's no way he can survive that. But he manages to pop up and be there. But I thought the way they shot the battle was really cool. Yeah, it was really good. Again, we get to know Lucy. We get to know that she's probably the outlier in that group. She's probably the outlier. She's the one who's a dreamer. She's the one who if someone is going to, I guess, bust out and leave the vault, that she's probably going to be the one. She's the one with the most moxie and the most spunk about her, that she's a little different to everyone else. And I think that while she's still, you know, a bit cute and a bit, you know, she just wants to get married and have children, you can also tell that there's a bit more to her. And obviously the fight explains that a bit. But, the episode, it just once she leaves there and we see the fight going on, it just ratchets up. And it's just complete bedlam for the next 20 minutes, which is really cool. I really enjoy that.
Well, she lies about her ability to shoot guns and shit right from jump in the montage because, like, it shows her shooting, like, the targets and, like, hitting them right in the chest. Like, right, yeah. You know what I mean? And she's like, I'm not very good at it.
I also thought it was really funny when the cousin won't open the vault door. And she pulls him aside and says, he goes, I love you. And he goes, look, you know, it's okay to have sex with your cousin now, but it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was really cool. That was really funny.
I know. They just said they even have incestual sex. It's great.
Yeah. And I guess that's...
Like, everybody knows.
There's not a huge choice in the vault, right? So you just get it where you can. So...
you got to do what you got to do, baby.
Well, that's it. This is it. Yeah, but no, I'm in for the season, right? As soon as he's drinking from the vase and she realizes that he's from the outside, I'm like, okay, I'm in. You've got me. You've hooked me.
Well, he doesn't help himself out when he wipes his dick off on her fucking curtain.
Yeah, that was amazing. There was a lot of things that he does that it's like, it's just very odd. that we're now in hindsight that you go back and you go, yeah, like it's you can see what they are, but yeah, very good, very good.
All right.
I wonder if that was scripted. I wonder if the wiping of the dick on the curtains was scripted. That would be an amazing ad lib. Imagine that the director's like Jonathan Nolan sitting in the chair, and suddenly the guy walks over to the curtains and wipes his dick on the curtains. Jonathan Nolan would have almost spunked in his pants and gone, "This is incredible."
That totally probably could have been an improvised thing. Totally too.
It looks like it was like how do you write in a script? You walk over to the curtains and you wipe your penis on the curtains. There's a good chance that's improvised. That, and if so, that guy's the greatest actor on the planet.
Or maybe that's actually how it's like to be a raider. That's actually raider behavior.
Yeah,
when you're a raider, right?
Yeah. All right. It was either ad libbed or it was in his bio that he was given by the director. Like, you are the filthiest scum of the earth. You have no respect for anything at all. I'm just going to wipe my dick on the curtains.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. What do you think, Jasmine? Your thoughts on that part of the episode, sir?
Okay, so a few things. Okay, so I was gone for a bit, but I was surprised that when I came back, Cyber was already talking about sex. So this is like the third time I leave the show and I come back to someone talking about sex.
Well, you get what we're talking to. We're talking to the right to the end of the fight that
I know
and Lucy have.
Yeah, yeah. And then another thing I want to talk about before I go on to what I want to talk about is...
Maybe you just really have poor timing of coming in, Jasm. You know, maybe that's the problem.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Second thing is when Matt says that Moldaver, the one who like plays Moldaver, is a baddie, I was like, does he mean baddie as in like she's a hottie or she's a baddie?
No. She's a bad person, not a hottie.
Okay, I'm just joking.
Mate, if the guys wipe their dicks on the curtains, I'd hate to think what the girls do. The girl raiders do, right?
Ooh, okay.
They're smearing a pillow. That's what they're doing.
Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is when we see the intro of like Lucy's who Lucy is, why she wants to go for marriage, I noticed that throughout that segment, the pit boys of their society is like iPhones of today. Have you noticed that? It's like, you know how like the brothers like on the table playing with the pit boys?
No way, but you can't talk through it like to people and whatnot. That's one thing you can't do.
Yeah. But you get the comparison, right? iPhones in this world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Or so like a cool watch. Yeah, kind of like similar.
More capable than an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just found that like quite interesting. What else?
The Pit Boys are really cool. They can do a lot of really cool shit.
Yeah, they do.
See that. Matthew, I'm sure you've already watched ahead, so you've already seen it does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's it.
It's good.
And then I also was disappointed with the wedding scene where, you know, she's all dressed up, you know, she's getting these hand-me-down dress, which Jeff would say is like a slut dress. But with the guy, it's like, at least put a tie or something, a suit and tie. Like, you just look like just like everyone else. Like, there's like nothing that makes you distinct. Like, hey, this is the guy getting married. Because at least the girl, it's like she wearing something completely different. So I don't know if it's like the writer's part that they chose to do this, or that's just how it's like in that world. But I just think at least make the guy look different, you know, wear a different dress and stuff.
Is the guy irrelevant to the union? Is the guy just primarily just the purpose?
He's just a stud
for procreation.
Yeah, that's all.
So is the focus on the woman?
It is,
because she's the one that's going to give birth.
That's why.
So whereas the man, it could be anyone. It could be any one of those men. And so, whereas with the woman, she's the one that it's, you know, sure, we have to do our bit, but is the focus purely on the woman and the wife? because she's in charge of the procreation. She's going to give birth to the child. That's one way I thought about it. I did think that was odd that there was not enough onus put on the bloke. But then I thought, well, he's a bit irrelevant.
Yeah,
you know, just irrelevant later on. Yeah, he's definitely relevant later on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. And then I guess, let's see, what else do I have on here? Okay. I think Cyber talked about this while it's gone, but the dude, when he goes into Lucy's like room, he just simply takes off his clothes, and then she's like, okie dokie, and then they just go for it. Like, there's nothing seductive about that. There's no sweet talk. There's no, like, you know, foreplay. It's just immediate. Like, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
It's
she's a horny minx.
Yeah, she's horny.
But this is the first time she's having sex with someone that's not she's not related to.
Yeah, that's a big jump.
Like I felt a bit the same though. I think you're a hopeless romantic, Jasmine. I think this is the problem. I think you're a bit of a romantic, right? And so that's cool, and I get that. But no, I think that
it's like the other shows. You don't even see it. Only this one, you see that.
But I agree. I thought, well, God, she's right into it. But then I thought, well, she's been rooting a cousin for 10 years. She's probably happy to get some different type of dick.
No, he didn't.
Like- just and you know, let's just get started.
And he didn't look like he could. He was really getting after it anyway.
He wasn't a bad looking rooster though. Like, you know, he was good. He was an attractive man. He so she's like, oh, well, if this is what it's about, then let's do it.
Yeah,
it's a hell of a lot better than a fork in your eye. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I also found it interesting that in the end, it's like he chose the curtains instead of like the bed sheets. Like, why not the bed sheets? Like, that's like the closest thing you can just, you know, do it on. At least you're not like dripping on the floor as you walk into the curtains.
But I think that's part of the disrespect. I think that's the best part.
That's
because I
true.
Think that you could like because it's
that tells that he's a raider.
Yeah, I think it's just he doesn't give a shit about anything.
Yeah, and then you like, and when I saw him like filling the jug with water, I thought he's gonna be like, okay, I'm gonna steal this water and take it to my room. I don't know why I thought about that. And then, of course, you know, when he starts drinking it and she puts her Pip Boy at him, it's all over. Let's see, what else? Also, a good question is, how did Vault 32 just suddenly become filled with raiders? It's like, how?
They somehow got in there.
Yeah, how? That's a good question.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find that. I'm sure surely we have to find that out.
Somewhere. Okay. Think, that's
because obviously she, when later on in the episode, when she leaves, obviously someone's gone to leave from Vault 32.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone's come in. I don't know. Yeah.
Jess, if you wanted this, let me wrap up the rest.
Well,
of
I'm
the-
already done.
I was going to say, you can go ahead and start if you want. I'll go to you first. Wrapping up the rest of the scene is what we do see here actually come out and see the full-on landscape of the Raiders fighting her vault people, right? And basically killing them left and right. The one guy's all fucking zonked out on jet, right? Like all jetted out and shit and whatnot, stimmed out or whatever, stimmed out and shit and whatnot, running around killing people, throwing them around. You see there's all kinds of violence, all kinds of gore. You see the chick get stuck with the fork and then pick up the fucking machine gun and shit, or whatever, and he's shooting machine gun and shit, right? And basically you do see Monty come back all fucked up and shit and whatnot from his face getting torn right off. And like Kyle MacLachlan's character, the father, who's his father, kills him and like, you know, sticks his head in a barrel of water and shit and whatnot. And basically what ends up happening is that Lee, Lucy and her father get to the point where they see Lee Moldover, and she's got a bomb, right? And she's got all the people lined up as hostages, and she gives him a choice. Save your daughter or save these people, right? And he chooses to save his daughter. They take the father, right, and say that they're taking him to the real world outside the vault. And she tells the other people, the vault people, to just go and run and hide like they usually do. And then the bomb goes off and whatnot and everything, right? And, you know, we move on from there to Maximus, right? So going to you, Jason, what did you think of that whole part of that ending part of that Lucy scene?
Okay, so the ending, a couple things. Firstly, I was surprised they chose not to execute, like, all of those hostages. Like, you know how, like, we saw earlier, it's like, you know, they're killing everyone. Like, you never really saw them, like, take prisoners. And then suddenly in the end, it's like, they're taking prisoners. Like, what? But it was very interesting that it seemed like both Moldaver and the father, they know each other. So I had this theory that it could be that the vaults are involved in, like, some experiment, and that both the father and Moldaver, they, like, know about it. And when the father sends Lucy into, like, that one room and, like, closes the door, so, like, you know, there's only, like, a circular window that, like, she can see outside of, it was very interesting the way that Moldaver looked at Lucy. Like, you know, she was, like, saying some stuff, but then she's like, wait a minute, you look like your mother. But yeah, the way that she looked at Lucy, it's like as if a scientist was looking at her lab rat. Like, that's what I got from that. Just the way that she looked at Lucy. I don't know if you guys got that same perspective, but that's what I got. So I think this is, like, going to lead up to, like, some sort of, like, bad secret that we learn about later on. And that's all I have for this segment.
I'm going to go to you then, Matt, and then to you, Cypher. I'm going to get up real quick and grab a drink. I'll be right back. But go ahead, Matt. What are your thoughts on the wrap-up of that Lucy scene where we see all the carnage and all the fighting and whatnot and everything, and how that all ends?
Yeah, I think the battle is unreal. I think that it's pretty violent. A lot of shit's going. The way I judge a good fight scene is what's going on in the background. And there's a lot of stuff in the background which actually looks like is really going on, whereas something like Braveheart, where in the back they got floppy swords and they're, like, just tapping against each other and it's all over. But this actually looks like it would have been a pretty cool scene to direct, because there's a lot of stuff going on. I think it's brutal. The fork to the eye, the guy just slams her face down on that fork, is just so brutal. But then her being able just to man up and just pick up the machine gun and just blow everyone away was pretty cool. I think that, yeah, it's bedlam. There's so much going on. There's so much to take in. I'm a bit with you, Jasim, is that I don't understand why they just didn't kill everyone. Why they left, like, 10 people or 8 people. And I understand that that maybe they took the hostages so that she would stop and that effectively then be able to take Kyle MacLachlan. But I still thought that they might have killed everyone anyway once they got him. Obviously, they did blow the bomb, which didn't really have a lot of effect, to be honest. It was more a bit of show rather than anything else. It didn't really do much damage at all. But it sort of just... What was the... So obviously the end game was to kidnap Cooper because he's got information, because, you know, the feeling is that the baddie and Cooper have some relationship from before, and she needs him for something, and we don't know that what that is yet. But I'm a bit perplexed as to why she didn't kill everyone. And I tend to agree with you, Jasmine. I'm interested to see why she knows so much, and why she didn't need to make that comment about, oh, you look like your mother. And it's so I think there's a lot of things that are being dropped, which we're gonna discover later on in the show as to from just this episode. There's a lot of comments, and they may go to, and look, with most TV series, they're done and there's no thought behind it and they're just part of dialogue and they don't go on. But I actually think that there are some of these things that have been said is a little too obvious for them not to mean more later on in the series. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens from that. But yeah, no, very good. Love the battle.
Cyberdyne Shark, sir.
All right, so the conclusion of Lucy's kind of, like, paradigm or story, I should say, You know, we get all that crazy action that goes on after she comes out and sees everyone starting fighting and killing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, everyone's pretty much mentioned, you know, the girl with the fork in the eye. She ends up taking the machine gun and blowing a whole bunch of people away. You know, we just have everyone's like all these raiders, whatever you want to call them, these outside dwellers coming in. And I agree with Jason. Like, how the hell did they all get in so quickly? Like, how did that door get open? Like, was that bad guy chick, was she down there before? Like, what's going on? So that kind of throws a question in, like, how did they get down there? Like, who let them in? And, but just how it, you know, how it rounded out the pretty much most of them getting beat up real bad or a whole bunch of them getting killed and all that kind of stuff. It just like you were kind of watching and thinking like, holy crap, are any of these like 33 people going to survive? Like, really? Like, they're all getting their ass beat pretty much. And, you know, it doesn't help that, you know, they've been underground for so many years and mating with their cousins and stuff like that too. It doesn't help. And, so it's like you're kind of watching it going, okay, this is interesting. And the action's not too bad. But at the same time, you're just like, holy crap. There's so much. When the one guy gets squished by the door, I think was probably one of the best kills in that freaking sequence where it just like crushes him and explodes. That was like freaking awesome. I love that. And that was just like a really clever way of killing the guy too. I thought that was just really smart. But when, you know, the now ex-husband comes back out of nowhere to attack Lucy, you're just like, what the hell? Like, how the hell is he still alive with that giant gash in his neck? I'm like, how the hell does that even work? And then, of course, Kyle MacLachlan comes out of nowhere and basically ends him. And basically, you know, the whole scene there, it was bizarrely crazy, but at the same time, interesting. That one guy making his way to different spots after like he sees what's going on with the other people being attacked and stuff like that, and he somehow keeps himself from being attacked. I don't get that, but that was pretty funny. That guy, I've seen that guy in other things. He's pretty funny. He's always pretty decent in the movies. I forget what his name was in the show, but he was pretty fun. And but them making their way and coming into that room where all of the remaining outside dwellers are remaining. There's a bond there, and that one evil chick who, like I said, it's gonna be interesting to see like her story down the line, like more about her, because my first thought was like, who the hell is this chick? Like, why is she down there for one? Why is she upset? Why does she want, you know, Kyle MacLachlan? And, you know, like, what's her deal? So, you know, it's kind of like there's a lot of questions left there with just all of a sudden her just popping up there, demanding him come with them, basically, or she's going to kill all these people or somebody. And, you know, Kyle MacLachlan just freely going with them, I was, like, really shocked by too as well. I'm like, huh, that's interesting. And, you know, and basically him being tranked, because that's pretty much what that, you know, Lucy was doing earlier when she got that from the armory, that gun. It was just a trank gun, which I was like, at first I thought it was going to like make people's heads explode or something like that. I'm like, I want to see some action here. I want to see some blowing up of body parts, please.
They cleaned out the armor. They cleaned out their armory completely.
Yeah. So it's like, when it was just like sedatives, I'm like, ah, man, that sucks. But anyways, you know, that chick making these demands, and I'm still just like, what the hell? Like, what the hell? And then she, like, before she leaves, she's like, you look just like your mother. And I'm like, huh? So apparently she's been down there before. She's definitely somebody that they knew in the past, because even Kylie Lamothlin says, I know who you are. So it's like, come on, why didn't you give me more information on this girl in this episode? Like, I would have liked to know a little bit more. I mean, I know it's like, you know, kind of like that, you know, making you want to come back for more type of deal, that little sugar trail leading into it. Or if you're into drugs, the cocaine trail or something, I don't know. Anyways, but still, like, she pissed me off in that scene. I just didn't like her. like, I was like pissed at her. Like, I want to beat that chick up. Like, cause she just did what she did. I'm like, evil woman. And, I was just like, ooh, I'm like thinking to myself too at the same time. I'm like, oh, that's a really great presence then that you were giving that great of a performance that you are instantly hated. I'm like, holy crap. That's good. That's really good. Well, I appreciated how villainy she was and how much I hated her at first. So that I did, it wasn't really done well. But anyways, so yeah, great sequence, fun action, and overall decent.
Okay, moving on to Maximus. Well, you know what? First, I actually think I have the trailer. Let me play the trailer. I do.
Hello there. I'm here to show you a wonderful place. A veritable Camelot, the nuclear age. Not made by God Almighty, but the working man.
You can be a hero by purchasing a residence in a Vault-Tec vault today. Because if the worst should happen tomorrow, the world is going to need you to build a better day after.
The mission of the vaults should be important to everyone. To come up to the surface one day and restart civilization. Can you tell me what's happened in the last 200 years?
Holy shit. You're an actual vault dweller.
I am.
I thought all you dipshits were dead.
What you're doing is insane.
I don't accept the world.
It isn't like the vault out there. It's big.
I just want to start.
I've had a rough week. Practically every person I've met up here has tried to kill me.
I'm simply going to harvest your organs.
You need to go home. You come from a world of rules, of laws. You should not be alone.
Why did you join the Brotherhood?
To hurt the people who hurt me?
People are going to come after you.
Ain't much stage cleanup here, Vaulty. Well, now that is a very small drop in a very, very large bucket of drugs. Look out at this wasteland. Looks like chaos, but there's always somebody behind the wheel.
To save the world, they just agree on how.
There you are, you little killer.
A flame in your heart.
There you go. So we go into Maximus's whole arc, right? And we see right off the bat, after he gets he's getting his ass beat, the size of the way that they shot that ship that came in, that airship, right? With all the vibro birds, whatever the fuck they're called, circling around it and whatnot. That thing looks so awesome. That shot with that big carrier, you know, flying ship or whatever, whatnot. That was dope. And we basically see Maximus, and he's, you know, like, he wants to become a squire to one of the, you know, the knights. You see the knights come out in their power armor, right? Their T-64 power armor, whatever, whatnot. And they're all together in a group or whatnot and all that. And that's what they want to do. He's there to train to be a squire to one. That's how you become one. So you see a Nuka-Cola machine, right up in front of the building where Maximus and Dane, his friend, go to actually look at the power suits before they bring Dane in to let him know that they're going to make him a squire, which pisses Maximus off. He's all pissed off and everything, but out of shape, right? And all of a sudden, they wake up the next morning, and Dane's got razor blades in his fucking boot and, like, slices his fucking foot off or whatever, or some shit, like his skin's hanging off or whatever. It's fucking crazy. Gory as shit. And they blame Maximus, so they, like, go ahead and they bag his head and whatnot to go take him for interrogation, right? So before going back to Lucy, I skipped some stuff in there, obviously, on purpose. I'll start with you, Matt. What were your thoughts on the opening scene with Maximus before we switch back to Lucy?
Yeah, this is, again, this is great. I agree. I think it just looks incredible. Like, I keep going back to it. Everything about this episode looks great, and the entrance of that huge ship with all the smaller ships come in is great. We find out that Maximus is a bit of a pussy. Like, he, and we don't really understand why. And is his friend, is that a man or is that a girl? Like, I think it's a dude. Played by a woman, right?
It's a dude.
Is it a dude?
Yeah.
I was about to look up the name.
I was questioning them too, but that was a dude. I was watching it on Amazon and it showed the actor's name and everything.
I think it's a woman. A woman plays her. It's a woman. Yeah, it's a girl.
Really?
Zelia Mendez Jones. It's a female.
No shit, really?
Yeah. Because the whole time I was watching it, I'm going, is this a man or is this a woman? They do a really good job of sort of making her androgynous, I guess, and not really knowing what she is. And I think it's irrelevant anyway. It's regardless. But I'm interested to find out whether it's you know, again, we go back in time to knights and squires, right? And it's, you know, if your big job that you want to be is you want to carry a bag for a guy in a steel suit, like, have higher, you know, try and push for something better than just being a bag holder to some guy in a steel suit. I know you're cleaning a shitter, but, you know, you can be better than just a bag holder. And I'm interested to see. He says, I want to hurt the people that hurt me, is his reason for being involved. Now, again, I'm sure we'll find out later on what happens. But yeah, I thought this was interesting. I was very interested to find out what role the knights play, what their job is. We don't really know what that is yet. We don't know how the people are chosen to be a knight. There's all these things that we need to that will be unpacked hopefully in the next 7 episodes. But the thing that got me the most was that, you know, that's definitely a female and she's definitely playing a man. And
I was wondering,
that's where we are in 2024.
I mean, Euphoria had something like that. So
well, I was going to go to you next anyways, Jasm. What are your thoughts, sir, on the opening sequence with Maximus before we go over to back over to Lucy and then back to Maximus?
Okay, so, I mean, Matt did a great job with everything. One thing that I wanted to talk about is, so basically, Maximus went to Dane after Dane woke up screaming from bed because he happened to have razor blades in his boot. They blame Maximus immediately just for going up and checking in on Dane when everyone else was just like, chilling back there. Like, that's the only reason I thought that they just immediately were like, okay, Maximus, you're guilty. Very messed up, I have to say that. But I will trust that it's going to be part of the character process. So, yeah. Wait, Jess.
So, do you just hang on. Sorry, Jason. So, do you think that he did it?
No, I don't think Maximus ever did it because he was like busy doing his poop stuff.
You see the one guy jerking off in the barracks?
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny.
Oh, also, Jeff, did you talk about the part where... Oh, yeah, you talked about where like he got promoted.
No, okay. I didn't talk about where Dane got promoted. Yeah,
Dane. Yeah. You know what's interesting is after Dane got promoted, did you notice that a bunch of these other people who Dane never really talked to just suddenly went to celebrate with him? They all went to that barracks together. And then only the next morning, he gets like razor blades in his boots. And Maximus was like away from Dane like the whole time. So that's why I think it has to be one of those people that, you know, beat up Maximus in the beginning.
Well, Cyber, what did you think of the rock basketball they were playing, sir? They weren't very good at it.
It looked stupid. That's all I got for it. Sorry. It just looks stupid.
What do you think of the Maximus scene, sir?
So, like, the introduction to this dude, just from get-go, this guy just seems like a loser. You know, like, he's basically pathetic. And, you know, to make this character act kind of to be like that, I honestly don't know if this character is in the video games or not. Or what his, like, you know, his deal is in the video game series. But if this guy is an actual character in the game, you know, that just like cracks me up, because like, why would you make a character like this for the game? And it'd just be kind of funny. But like him having this jealousy of, you know, his friend Dane or Dame, whatever you want to call him. And him basically, you know, getting higher rank than him right away. And basically them, like, taking him away in that cloth, and then, like, he has that conversation with that older gentleman that's a part of the Knights.
We're not going that far.
Said bagged over his head.
The point where the bag, just to the point where he gets the bag over his head, not where he talks.
You need to cut things up better, sir. You're fucking up here, sir.
Everybody else could hear what I said.
No, they didn't. Because everyone went past it.
No, they didn't.
I didn't go past it.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Wait, where did I go past it?
You were talking about the other stuff, sir. I heard you.
What? Tell me. Go on. Go on.
I'm
say
not going to tell you what. What you said. You know what you said.
Matt, what did I say?
Oh, I think you said that you thought that Dame.
Yo, what part did I go past? Dame
has a penis.
You said, Jasmine, you said when he becomes a knight.
I asked him, did you go past the part where did you mention the part where Dane gets promoted? I only asked him that, I swear.
You may proceed, sir.
Okay, so back to Lucy, very simply, back at the vault, you know, she tries to round up a group of people to go and hunt for her father. They're not down for it, so she decides to take off on her own, very simply, against the, you know, the will of other people like her cousin and whatnot in the vault that say that she can't handle going outside on her own. She goes out anyway. And goes out and sees all the skeletons from the people and shit and whatnot out there, and people who got caught in the blast waves and all that, right? And then we can flip over back to Maximus, and then we see the interrogation, which was really well done, with the guy with the power armor, the knight, walking around behind him, scaring him and shit and whatnot the whole time, while the elder from the Commonwealth or whatever whatnot is talking to him and interrogating him. It's a really great conversation. I thought it was really well done, and the actor that plays Maximus, I thought was really good in that, really strong. In that scene. But basically, you know, he's asked if he put the razor blades in the shoe or whatever. And Maximus says the right shit. And so the elder makes him the new squire to Knight Titus. And he gets his brand in the ceremony and all that shit and whatnot and all that. And he's all happy. And then we find out that they're going to send all the knights and the squires out to go find this guy Willits from the trailer that they have the picture of, along with his dog meat from the game, probably. And they're all going to go search the wild in different sections and whatnot to go find this Willits guy, because he's got some object that could either be like the devastation of the human race or like the salvation or whatever, right? And I'll stop there. I'll go to you, Cybernetic Shark. What are your thoughts, sir, on Lucy taking off on the vault on her own? and what she sees, her seeing the Pacific Ocean, how that shot and everything and whatnot, I thought it looked really great. And then, you know, the Maximus actually being interrogated scene, along with him being branded and, you know, made it Titus's official squire.
So the Lucy stuff, it was pretty, you know, you knew it was coming. You know, after her dad was taken, you knew she was going to try to go after him. So it wasn't anything, like, spectacular, but it definitely, I knew it was coming, and I knew that she was going to eventually leave because that's, you know, what the character does in the game. So I thought that it was okay. You know, I thought that it had some okay moments, and that was decent. And I definitely thought that it had... it could have been a little better. I thought it could have been a little more dramatic or a little more entertaining. I found it just pretty bland, that sequence. And I thought that it could have, you know, had more oomph to it. Then getting back to Maximus and his interrogation scene, which was an okay interrogation scene. I mean, him stuttering and him basically kind of, you know, answering the questions to try to give his own answers and stuff like that, trying, you know, basically, you know, saying that he had nothing to do with the blades and Dane's boot and stuff like that. And, you know, the knight in the back, that those suits are freaking awesome. I absolutely love those suits. They're so freaking badass. And so that the scene where it shows them walking up prior to this was so cool. And you just like, you look at them, you're like, holy shit, I want to be in one of those suits. I want to be able to operate one of those. Those are so freaking cool. It's like, it would be like, you know, operating a giant robot or something. So when the guy is pacing the back, the knight is pacing the back of him during the interrogation scene, I'm like, ooh, what's he going to do? Is he going to do just something really crazy? And nothing ends up happening. I was like, oh, man. But still, a great, you know, decent, okay interrogation scene, you know, them... we knew that they were going to make him the next, you know, take over that Dane character's role as the next, what are they called?
Squire.
Squire. Thank you. The next Squire. And so then showing him get branded and like officially, you know, become that Squire. That wasn't too bad. The scenery, like you're talking about after, you know, Lucy leaves, that was very, I thought done really well. I thought the CG looked really well. I thought it looked very cinematic. I thought it looked like, you know, movie grade quality CGI. And, if you looked at it, you could see like it was pretty much, I think it was supposed to be like in the New York, New Jersey area. If you think about it.
No, it's not that.
Oh, LA.
It's LA.
LA.
Santa Monica.
Or LA. Or, you know, a big city. How about that, folks? A fucking big thing.
Is that big?
God damn. Jesus Christ. But anyways, the giant Ferris wheel was cool looking over to the side. That was like messed up and stuff like that. So that made me think of like, you know, Pleasure Island or, one of the islands, those giant amusement parks that are.
Coney Island.
Yeah, thank you. Coney Island. That's what I was thinking, Jersey, New York type of deal. Maybe think of that. So even though it's supposed to be L.A., it gave me that feel, but it looked really interesting.
Okay, Jasmine, your thoughts, sir, on that part of the episode?
Okay, so to clarify, it's actually Santa Monica. Like, you can see the entire Monica pier.
Yeah,
they even confirmed it.
I think it's Santa Carla from the Lost Boys.
No, it's actually Santa Monica, like for real.
Okay.
Yeah. Very beautiful. Like, I love how she comes in right when it's a sunset. And I think that's pretty symbolic because we're near the end of the episode. So, like, the sunset kind of like indicates that it's near the end of the episode. I liked how, even though it's like a nuclear blast that happened, it's like, you know, most of the pier structure is still intact. I found it interesting that as she's leaving the vault and like you're seeing like the skeletons and you're seeing like people's bodies being formed to ash, all I could think about was Pompeii. Like what Pompeii, that whole volcanic eruption was, like that's what the nuclear blasts were of, you know, that time. So I love seeing like all the ruins and stuff. The whole experience, It's just like you're recreating, like, being a survivor of the Pompeii explosion, Pompeii eruption. I don't have much to say about the interrogation scene, so I will end over here.
Okay. All right, Matthew.
Yeah, Jasmine, it's I want to touch on the Pompeii thing, and I'm going to just go off topic here for a second. Has anyone seen the outtakes of Anchorman 2 with Ron Burgundy talking about the how the villagers of Pompeii felt, except they were rained down by rivers of ejaculate? It's one of the funniest things of all time. It's the funniest part of Anchorman 2. The rest of the movie's shit house. But look, I think that I don't know if any of you guys caught, but when they start to rebuild the vault and they put the poster up about the outside world can't hurt you, and they've just been raided by the raiders, I think they seem to just be going on about their everyday, like this is something that happens all the time. Like it's just, righto, roll on, let's just restart again. So, you know, although it doesn't seem like this has happened before, you've got a question as to whether it does happen. It has happened before because it's just like, well, we just roll on. Whereas there's no shock or there's nothing. They're not experiencing anything apart from it's just another day. We just got to rebuild. So I thought that was a little bit odd. The whole Maximus, I agree. I think before I get to Maximus, but again, when she leaves and she does go out, it's so beautiful. Like it's I can't get over how good this episode looks. I think that the nuclear blast was very kind in not destroying any major landmarks, so that we could still see where things were. So how the Ferris wheel, which is made out of like 2-inch pipe, survives a nuclear blast. But, you know, I think that's good. But I did question about, like this is 219 years after the blasts have happened. Surely none of this stuff is still standing after 219 years, right? I think it would have been blasted that badly by the elements and that nothing really would be up. But it looks great, right? And I think that's why they keep it, because it looks great, right? The bit with Maximus, I thought that he's just coming across as so weak in everything that he does that you can just see that they're building for a character arc with him specifically, where he's going to end up being some Superman and a hero and save the world. Because they are making him out to be. The fact that his best friend says, well, I told them I knew that it couldn't be you because you couldn't hurt a fly, right? And then this guy's big picture is to be one of the Metal Knights. Like, they're obviously building to something with him. Does he look like Kang? He looks like that Jonathan Majors, doesn't he? He's like, it's his dead set brother. And I couldn't get over that the whole time. I'm thinking, is this him? Didn't he get done for like battery or something? He's never going to act again. But he's somehow, yeah, but it's his, I think he's related to him. He's got to be. But yeah, and I think that I'm a bit with you, Jasmine. There's not much more to talk about from the interrogation. It's not great. It's okay. You know, effectively, it's only there because they're going to anoint him as the next bag carrier. But again, looks great.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And so we segue from that to the ghoul scene, right? And which I'm not going to really talk that heavily about or whatever, whatnot. You guys all saw it. It's pretty simple. These three dudes go to find the ghoul, right? Who's in the ground with these bags of like some kind of serums or some shit and whatnot, like keeping him alive under the ground. They unearth him and whatnot and everything to like bring him in it to like team up with him to go bounty hunt that Willits guy, right? And to get the dude says this is gonna be a career ending kind of job and whatnot and all this shit. Well, the ghoul don't like all that shit and whatnot, so he kills all of them and shit and decides he's gonna go out and take on the bounty himself, right? And I'll go to you first, Jasmine, on this one. What'd you think of the whole goal scene of him coming back from the introduction of the episode and then being the ghoul at the end?
So I actually like that they made him the ghoul in the end. You know, you keep the whole cowboy outfit, but I never expected that the guy goes from being like, you know, a life-size, what do you call it, in Toy Story? That cowboy from Toy Story. What's his name again?
Not Woody.
Woody.
Yeah, he goes from, like, being, like, a real-life Woody, like, years ago, centuries ago, to, like, being this, like, badass cowboy today. Like, how? Like, I'm curious to learn more about that. In the beginning, though, I will say that it was kind of stupid for these three bounty hunters. Like, go find some, like, dead legend. Like, you're going to get yourself into some crazy stuff. I don't know why they agreed to it, but oh well. And finally, before I leave the rest of you guys, why was there an IV hanging from, like, the tombstone to his coffin? It's like, was someone else there, like, trying to, like, give him superpowers? I don't know.
I'm not sure what the hell that was about either. Cybernetic Shark, sir, what are your thoughts on that ghoul scene at the end?
Well, just like Matt, I'm a huge Walton Goggins fan. Anything he's in, I absolutely freaking love. I watch, I see, because he is just absolutely pure talent of a comedian, dramatic actor, action star. He can do it all. He is really good. If you have not seen Righteous Gemstones, watch it just for him, because he is one of the best parts. Oh, my God. Baby Billy. Anyways, Walton Goggins is just an awesome actor. And so when I found out that he was going to be in this, that was one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to watch the show, is because of him. And when I found out that, you know, in this episode that he was playing the ghoul, I'm like, oh, that would explain why he's still alive 200 and whatever years later. I was like, how the hell is he still alive 200 years later, you know, when this is supposed to be taking place? And I'm pretty sure those IVs were to bring him back to life, to give him fluids so that he could be reanimated. That's what you were seeing there, is to reanimate him so he would come back to life. And if anybody didn't realize that, one of the robbers there, that was Mikael Williamson, that played Bubba and Forrest Gump. It was in He and was in a whole bunch of films. I think it was funny that was him, and I was just cracking up. I'm like, holy crap, I haven't seen you in forever. And I was like, wow, you actually look pretty good. I was like, him with the gold teeth was pretty funny, but I thought he did a good job there. But I think just how he comes to life, the ghoul and everything, and Walt Goggins just did a great job of giving that a great, like, entrance and a great, like, just, it was pure amazement. And it was such a great way to end the episode. To give us that great kind of, like, flash into him, even though we'll be getting more of him, still, that was just a really great way, I thought, that he ended. I loved it. I thought it was great.
He had one really great line where he was like, "I'm in it for the action," or something like that, like a Heat moment, you know. Like, Matthew, what do you think, man? What are your thoughts
on the scene or on that?
Yeah, on the whole goal scene.
Yeah, I it was a good way to end. It leaves you with a bit of a cliffhanger. You see his brutality. Like, you know there's going to be no fucking around with him, which is great. Again, there's lots of questions that need to be answered, like, are we going to find out? Although he does say in the trailer when she shoots him with the dart, and he goes, well, that's just a little bit of, a little shot to a whole heap of drug cocktail sort of thing. So you can assume that what you're saying is right, Cyber, that he's kept alive by a cocktail of drugs that brought him back to life. Plus, he's obviously been irradiated something horrendous. He forgot to put zinc on his nose or sunscreen on his nose. But again, look, I think that, you know, you can't give enough praise to Walton Goggins. I think he's amazing. I think he's going to be the best character in this show for sure. And it'll be the reason that people keep coming back to it. There's no doubt. I think that in the short time that we've seen him, he's already pretty good. And it was great to see Bubba, not get his lip trip over the tripwire. But I also thought that, well, I like that he's in it for 1 minute and he just gets blown away. So I think that's really cool. So it's, he just finishes them off. It's just game over and move on. So it's, it's cool. Good end.
All right, ratings time. What do you think, Jason? What's your rating on the episode, episode one?
I would rate it an 8. I mean, fantastic episode, but I'm new to Fallout, so some stuff, like, there might be some plot holes there that I might have not known until I did more research.
Matthew, what's your rating, sir?
I give this a 9.5. This hooked me big time. Like, I'm with Jasm. I hadn't played the game. I knew nothing about Fallout at all. So this really hooked me early, and I'm really looking forward to watching the rest of the season. So 9.5 for me.
Cyber?
I give it a 9. 9 because of Walton Goggins, and a 9 also because they didn't show any of Lucy. So it gets a 9.
I'll give it a 9.5 as well. I think that's a good rating. It's a really good episode. The Lucy scenes especially are really well done. And I like that interrogation scene with the Maximus actor. I think it's really good with the power armor guy walking around behind him, scaring him and shit. Uses his voice at one point and says to him, speak or whatever, you know. Like, I thought that was dope. But all right, folks, that's our wrap up for our recap of Fallout Episode 1. I'm going to go ahead and plug everybody out so we can get the hell out of here. So I'll start with you, Mr. Matthew, over at Born to Watch. What is going on over at Born to Watch other than your stats? Let me get off your stats.
Get off my stats.
Blame TubeBuddy for that, not me.
Yeah, which is my stats, which are unimpressive. Look, yeah, good. We did a really fun episode of Basic Instinct, which was a lot of fun. A lot of talk about the leg cross and whether Sharon Stone is an innie or an outie. But we had a lot of fun, a lot of old man giggles in that one. But we're in the middle of covering in ode to Carl Weathers. We're about to do Rocky 2 next week. We're doing all the Rockies. We're doing one Rocky a month until we probably get to Rocky 5 and we just hurdle that one and go to Rocky Balboa. But, yeah, look, we're having a lot of fun. We're still not going live, but we're getting closer every week.
There you go. Yeah. And you did Band of Brothers. I didn't know you were doing Band of Brothers.
Oh, no, just a little clip of Band of Brothers there.
Oh, okay.
We do want to do Band of Brothers. We won't get to that one just yet, but we will get to it.
I don't blame you. It'd be a great show to review.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Saturday Night Shark, sir. You're next.
All right, folks. If you enjoyed me on the panel, or if you enjoy me as a moderator when I moderate the show, you can definitely check out my solo content. You'll find me under Cybernetic Shark on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, Patreon, and pretty much anywhere, you know, that this stuff is going on. So you can definitely check that out and see for yourself just my solo content. And if you haven't subscribed, definitely give that subscribe. I want to thank all my new subscribers, all my old subscribers. Thank you for bringing me to that over that 1,000 mark. So you guys are rocking it. More stuff to come soon, folks. More stuff, more trailers, more reviews for you guys.
All right, you heard it. And Jasm, I don't have any links for you, sir, or anything to
No, I'll get you something for episode 8, Shogun.
Okay, episode 8, Shogun, you'll have something for me. All right, folks, for the MCU's Bleeding Edge, we are out. We will see you next time. Peace.
Now there ain't nothing to it. Go ahead and bring Goliath on. Ain't no giant, I ain't gon' fire on. Catch a fade, you, I'm wrong, I'm gone. Y'all can catch the wave that I am on. I am Icon, y'all are wide wrong. Think that